Well, what I'd like to talk about tonight is ahimsa, or non-harming. Non-harming is a very central, very basic teaching of Buddhist practice. We could also call it honoring life. A quote from Starhawk about the sacredness of life. Let us be clear that when I say goddess, I am not talking about a being somewhere outside of this world, nor am I proposing a new belief system. I am talking about choosing an attitude, choosing to take this living world, the people and creatures on it, as the ultimate meaning and purpose of life, to see the world, the earth, and our lives as sacred. So non-harming, or honoring life, can be a way of viewing life, a way of directing our lives. If we hold the premise or the idea of not harming any living being, that will direct our actions and guide us as we make decisions and choices in our lives. And from the Dhammapada, the reading on harmlessness. All beings tremble before violence. All fear death. All love life. See yourself in others. Then whom can you hurt? What harm can you do? He who seeks happiness by hurting those who seek happiness will never find happiness. For your brother is like you. He wants to be happy. Never harm him. And when you leave this life, you too will find happiness. See ourselves in the other. And I would add, see ourselves in all things. It reminds me of the Christian concept of the golden rule. You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Or love thy neighbor as thyself. Or the Dalai Lama talks about a religion of kindness. So non-harming is often associated with the precepts. And I'll go over them. Especially the first precept. Or maybe often when we talk about non-harming, it seems we get stuck in the first precept. The first precept being that of not killing, not taking life, or said positively, honoring life. So in What the Buddha Taught, he speaks of the precept of nonviolence. Nonviolence, which means not only that he should harm nobody, but also that he should try to promote peace by avoiding and preventing war, and everything which involves violence and destruction of life. So that might sound like a big challenge, especially in this day of so much violence, it seems. But it's important for us to think about, I think. And when we think about nonviolence, we often think about those who have inspired us, like Martin Luther King or Gandhi, those that live their lives promoting nonviolence, but weren't passive. We're very active, very socially active, but in a nonviolent way. And the second precept is that of not stealing or not taking that which is freely, that which is not freely offered. Or, said positively, generosity. And Jack and Joseph, in one of their books, say, not to steal is basic non-harming. So actually, all of the precepts have to do with living a life of non-harming. And there are five basic ways that are talked about that if we follow these precepts, if we use them as our guides, they will help us not to harm, to live lives of non-harming. The third one is speech. Sometimes people think that's the most difficult precept, and perhaps one of the ways that we can cause or create the most harm. So it's a good one for us all to pay attention to and perhaps take as a challenge. How can we use speech wisely? How can we use our speech in such a way that it doesn't harm? Today I thought about it as I heard a report on the radio about the sniper back east, and a man was being interviewed about what he and his wife were doing with their children. They had two children, 5 and 8, and how did they talk to them and what were they telling them? And he said something that caught my attention. He said, "We tell our children there are bad people out there that do bad things." And I thought, you know, what a shame that he used that word, bad people. If he could have said there are people out there that do harmful things or do things that are not good or something like that, but bad people. For me, that's not wise speech, because that sets up that idea of bad people, which then, you know, can become evil people, which can become evil countries and evil axis, and et cetera, et cetera. And it certainly is a way of dividing, separating, right? It's certainly a we they kind of thing. If anyone says, you know, they're bad people, that of course infers that I'm not bad, I'm good, and that automatically sets up this separation. So if we can be careful, be aware of our speech. The fourth one, the fourth precept, is that of sexual conduct. That's another way, probably, that many of us have experienced harm, perhaps have also caused harm, by not using our sexuality wisely. Or we might call it conscious conduct, which of course is broader than just sexuality, but certainly applies to our sexuality. And the fifth precept is that of not intoxicating the mind with substances, or more recently we have come to add things like books, movies, television, ads, et cetera, et cetera. All the ways that we intoxicate the mind other than just substances. Because when the mind is not clear, when the mind is clouded, then we're more likely to cause harm by our actions or our speech. We're not as aware, we're not as mindful, we're not as careful. So following these precepts creates an attitude of non-harming. That's what they're all about. Jack Kornfield says this very lovely. Every great spiritual tradition recognizes and teaches the basic laws of wise and conscious human conduct. Whether called virtues, ethics, moral conduct, or precepts, they are guidelines for living without bringing harm to others. They bring sanity and light into the world. In every human being, there is the capacity to take joy in virtue, in integrity, and in uprightness of heart. When we care for one another and live without harming other beings, we create freedom and happiness. I also like to think of it as not exploiting. Many of the things I'm going to talk about seem to me have to do with not exploiting. Not exploiting each other, not exploiting the earth, a life of non-exploiting. So it seems to me important for us, when we think about living a life of non-harming, to take a look at some of the ways that we can or do possibly cause harm. And as I was reviewing what I had written, I thought, oh my gosh, this might sound really overwhelming. So I just want to say, before I go through it all, that it may sound or feel overwhelming. My intent is not to overwhelm you, but to help us all to see how important mindfulness is in our lives and how easily, if we're not mindful, we do things that are harmful and we don't even know we're doing it. We have no idea. And it could be that some of the things I mentioned, you've never thought of. What's happened for me over the last 15, 16 years of doing this practice is that I have become extremely sensitive to ways of harming. And so a lot of what I will say will come out of that, ways that I have become aware that that harm is so easily caused that 20 years ago I wasn't aware of either. And as I look back, I see ways that I caused harm that I had no idea I was doing it. And hopefully there'll be plenty of time for questions, so feel free to question me as I finish. So causing harm can be towards ourselves as well as towards others. It can be individually or collectively. You know, we can do it one-on-one. We can do it as a collective body, as a group, as a country, as a world. We can do it physically. We can cause physical harm, or probably more frequently, psychologically or emotionally. So I think it's important to start with ourselves, just like with loving kindness. We always start with ourselves. I think it's also very important to start, when we're looking at how or possible ways we harm, to look at ourselves. Because many of us cause more harm to ourselves than we ever will to anybody else. And how do we do that? There are probably lots of ways, but it seems to me one of the biggest ways that we harm ourselves is in our thoughts. Many of us are very, very harsh, very critical, very judgmental, very unkind and non-loving in our thoughts to ourselves. And it can be actually quite overwhelming when we begin to meditate and we see this busy mind and we see how much of it is critical, is judgmental of ourselves, maybe other people, but of ourselves in particular. So bringing awareness to that, paying attention to all the things we say to ourselves that create harm, that cause us to feel not good about ourselves. And when we don't feel good about ourselves, then we're much more likely to do things out in the world that are harmful. I'm reminded as I say this of the story that probably most of you have heard of a meeting the Dalai Lama had with Western teachers several years ago, where he asked them what was the most difficult or most common problem they came across in their teaching here in the West. And the first teacher spoke up and said, dealing with the self-hatred. And he didn't know what the teacher was talking about. He was puzzled. And as the story goes, he had to be told several times in different ways what the teachers meant by dealing with self-hatred. It was a concept that he was unfamiliar with. He had no idea what they were talking about. And when finally he understood it, he went around to this room full of teachers and asked each one, "Is that true for you? Is that true for you? Is that true for you?" And apparently, without exception, each one said yes. And as I understand it, he wept. That's the result of the thoughts that we allow to go on in our minds that create this self-hatred. Or maybe it's not so strong. Maybe it's not hatred for us, but self-doubt, self-criticalness, self-judgment. So maybe the first place to stop harming is to pay attention to those thoughts that often go unguarded. Gil was talking about a couple weeks ago in our practice day how we could, when we notice those self-critical, self-judging thoughts, stop and do some loving kindness. Just say a phrase of loving kindness to ourselves. May I be happy. And several of us tried it and found it to be quite effective. So that might be something for you to think about. When you catch yourself, when you become aware of a really self-harming thought, not only stop it, but actually supplant it with a kind thought. It doesn't have to be, "May I be happy." It could be, may I accept myself? May I be happy with myself? May I be contented? Whatever phrase comes up for you and seems to fit. I mentioned speech. Speech is certainly a place for us to be mindful, to pay attention to how we might cause harm. The Buddha talks about wise speech, about not gossiping, about not being untruthful, saying hurtful things. I have a friend who calls it loose talk. It's kind of talk that just rolls off without really paying much attention, without being very mindful. And someone said to me today how easy it is. You start talking about something and the conversation just goes on and you're into very unwise speech before you even realize it. Recently, there was an evening and a day here with Greg Kramer on Insight Dialogue, which was very much about wise speech and wise listening. And it's a technique. I won't go into it, but he talks about using a technique of pausing, relaxing, and opening. Pausing when we notice a reaction arising within us. Relaxing. And then opening. Because if we're relaxed and open, we're much less likely to say things that are hurtful or harmful. And we're aware of our reaction. So if we're aware of our reaction, then we don't just react. We don't just respond without thinking about it. As a therapist, one of the ways that I see that we create a lot of harm is in our relationships. Not just in speech, but in our actions. And so conscious relationships become very important. You know, all of us are wounded. It's just the human condition. We all carry wounds. And unfortunately, we tend to re-wound each other if we're not conscious of our wounds and not conscious of what we're doing. The unconscious tends to pull to us people that will help us to heal, help us to work out issues that that we need to work out. Often, I find the very thing that draws people together, not just in romantic relationships, but in friendships as well, the things that drew us to each other then down the road become the rub, become the most difficult thing. So being aware of ourselves, being aware of our woundedness, of our fears, of our limits, of our hurts, being willing to acknowledge them, to own them, so that we don't project them out on somebody else, or so that we don't end up blaming somebody else, but we own that this is my wound, this is my fear, this is my reaction. When I look back at ways that I have harmed in the past, that, of course, at the time I had no idea I was doing it. I wouldn't have done it if I'd been aware. But I look at how I was coming from mostly ignorance and fear. In my close relationships, my family, my significant other, my daughter, oftentimes things that I thought were taking important stands, or I was being strong, or I was doing, you know, what I thought was right. I look back, and sometimes they were hurtful. Even if from one perspective they were, I was being strong, or they were correct, or whatever you want to say, in another way, they were hurtful. It may have been the way I said them. It may have been what I said. It may have been that I wasn't sensitive enough to what was going on with the other person. So I really can't stress conscious relationships enough. Being aware of ourselves, our limits, our wounds, so that we don't harm others. And the more aware that we are, the less harm we're likely to create. The more we're asleep, unaware, the more harm we're likely to create. So what are some other ways that we create harm? What comes to my mind are things like animals, plants, the earth, and some ways that I have thought about that we harm animals. The first one that comes to my mind is the way they are treated as they're raised for our consumption. I don't know if any of you who are familiar with John Robbins' book, Diet for a New America. It's quite an expose on how animals are raised that are for our consumption. It's very hard to read that book. I have a friend who read it a few years ago and became vegetarian overnight. It was her response to the harm that she saw being caused to animals. And I think most of us are just unaware. Most of us have no idea how the animals are treated that end up being meat in the supermarket. Oftentimes, children don't even realize where the meat comes from. You know, it comes from the grocery store. That's all they know. They don't know how the animals are raised. So that's one way we can raise our consciousness. Things like the exotic animal trade. Animals bring a high price in some countries. Some exotic animals are you know, illegally trapped and then sold, either as pets or for their fur, for their tusks, for their leather, for their scales, whatever. There's apparently big money in the exotic animal trade. Last year I saw a program on PBS that really surprised me. It was a program on organ farms. Apparently, animals are now being raised simply for their organs. This particular program was on pigs. And it really shows how they've become commodities. You know, they're not even animals, because the pigs aren't raised to term. They're taken from their mother at a certain age. And they actually never really live. They're immediately drowned, I think it was, and the organs taken out to be transplanted into humans. These are places for all of us to think about and make our own wise decisions. How much is it okay for us as humans to exploit animals? How do we feel about using animals for our benefit only? Medical research, you know, experimentation is done on animals. Incredible cruelty to animals that that are being used for medical or product experimentation. And sometimes products, you know, demand that there be animal experimentation before they're released to the public. It's not necessary in this day and age. The more I read, the more I see that oftentimes there isn't a very good direct correlation between what happens in an animal and what is likely to happen in a human being. Also, with computers now, it's my understanding that many of the tests can be done through computers, and the animals don't have to be used. But it goes on. It goes on with many, many, many different kinds of animals, dogs and cats and rats and monkeys. I've even seen advertisements from breeders that breed their animals just for experimentation. You know, we have the best dogs or the best cats or whatever for your experiments. Plant life. As I said, since I've been doing this practice, and maybe it's just, you know, this personality or something, but I have become very sensitive to how we deal with all life. And I see how often we're totally unaware of the life of plants. We're cutting down forests at an alarming rate, right? Oftentimes, I see plants dug up just wantonly, sometimes with tractors, you know, to make room for freeway expansion or something like that. I see at this time of year, of course, lots of poinsettias that are beautiful, and they fill all the stores and markets, and then sometime after Christmas or after the New Year, I see them in the garbage, tossed on the street. No regard for the life of that plant. Or we have this thing about having to have perfect gardens, right? Everything has to be manicured. So plants are put in at a certain time when they're a certain size, and then when they outgrow that or they the flowers die, then the plant is ripped up and more seasonal plants are put in. Sometimes I have said things to gardeners or someone who just wantonly, you know, throws lumber or ladders or tools or something on the ivy or on the plants, and they look at me, you know, kind of like strange. But I say, you know, it's a living thing. It's alive. And we can treat it with respect. We can treat it as honoring life. Maybe the earth is the biggest concern right now. many of the things we are doing to our earth, to our planet, are causing harm not only to the earth itself, but to us. I just saw an article in the paper today, maybe you did too, that the idea has been raised to use breast milk as a way to test for local carcinogens, chemicals or things in the environment that cause cancer, because breast cancer has increased at such an alarming rate. And the idea is that so many of the chemicals that are in our environment will show up in the breast milk. And therefore, researchers can track where certain chemicals are strongest, and etc. It just says, you know, how chemically polluted our environment is. And asthma is greatly on the rise. As I hear about it, it's always related to environmental factors, chemicals that are being released in the air that are creating, I'm sure, not only cancer and asthma, but many other conditions. Garbage. I saw a program on the news a while back where garbage from New York City is now being transported on a barge down the coast. I can't remember to which state, Virginia or South Carolina or something, because New York City landfills are full, and they can't take anymore. So they actually put it on a barge and send it down the coast. How long can we do that? You know? How long can that go on? Space pollution. That was something I hadn't thought of. I have a friend whose son works at NASA, and she said before they can send up government satellites, they have to track all the satellites that are circling there. I can't remember how many. There are so many hundred satellites circling. And in order to clear a path, you know, to get a government satellite out, they have to, I don't know if I'm saying this well, but they have to know the position of all these satellites so they can clear a path to go out. It's just a way of saying how many satellites are now orbiting the Earth for our cell phones and all kinds of communication. And of course, nuclear waste. That's been a big problem for a long time. It just keeps piling up. What do we do with it? It seems like we just keep moving it around. Nobody wants it in their backyard. But somebody gets to have it, and then we get to worry about transporting it. And of course, nuclear waste comes mostly from weaponry or medical research. So what do we do? What do we do about all this? The thing I have found most useful is our mindfulness, just our awareness. It's probably impossible to live in this world without harming. That's just a given. Somebody said to me, you know, it's never enough. And in a way, that's true. No matter what we do, it is never enough. We will cause harm. We will kill. So with that as sort of a bottom line, then it seems to me we can pay attention. We can bring our recognition, bring our mindfulness to what we do every day, to our speech, to our behavior, to our relationships. We can pay attention to our intent. You know, in Buddhist practice, intent is often considered the most important thing. What is our intention? And if we're very aware of our deepest intention, not to cause harm, but to honor life, then I think we will begin to see the ways that we don't honor life, the way we harm, and begin to do things differently so that we don't create that harm. We have to be vigilant, though. We have to pay attention, because it's so easy to fall back into unawareness, just as it is on the cushion or in the chair, just as it is in meditation. It's so easy to get pulled away, to get distracted from our mindfulness, from the present moment. We have to be very vigilant and keep bringing ourselves back, bringing ourselves back. I remember many years ago, I saw Thich Nhat Hanh, the very well-known Vietnamese teacher at Stanford. And at that point, he was talking about ecology, the environment. And he said, when you use a plastic bag, just know that you're using a plastic bag. And one day, you'll stop using plastic bags. It's, for me, a great metaphor. When you do something, just know that you are doing it. And if it's something that creates harm, one day you won't do it. I think the things to remember from Insight Dialogue, pause, relax, and open. I think that's a good thing to remember, not only in our speech, but every day in our actions. Pause, relax, open. Then we're likely to be more mindful and be more careful about what we do. And last, but certainly not least, loving kindness. If we can't do anything else, we can at least do loving kindness. Last night, a senior student from Santa Cruz spoke at our group in San Jose. And she talked about being in Burma in the early 90s when all the schools were shut down because of there was a crackdown in the government. It's a very oppressive, very dictatorial government. And she was in the monastery at this time when there was this crackdown and all the schools were closed and there was much fear, much bloodshed. And she said to her teacher, "What can I do? What can I do?" And he said, "Do loving kindness. Do loving kindness for the people that are suffering. Do loving kindness for the government, for the perpetrators. Do loving kindness for yourself." And I think that's something that we can remember. Do loving kindness for ourselves. Do loving kindness when we see harm, whether it's to another person, an animal, the earth. Loving kindness for the earth. Loving kindness for the person who is not being mindful and is creating harm. Do loving kindness for ourselves when we feel helpless, or we don't know what to do, or we see that our actions are creating harm and we don't know how to change them. We're caught, as we all, of course, get caught. We each try in our own way to live mindful lives, non-harming lives, and yet we're part of a whole system. We're part of a whole way of life that creates harm, right? I drive my car every day. I drive my car more than I would like to. And, of course, my car gives off toxic emissions, right? I use gasoline. I kill bugs and et cetera as I'm driving. And there's always the chance that I'll kill somebody else. I certainly don't intend to, but there's always that chance. And yet, how do I live my life without driving a car? I've thought about it. I've thought about it a lot. Dick does, but I haven't seen a way that I could do that. I'm dependent on my car, and yet it creates harm. But I can do loving kindness, and I can be aware, And I can set my intent to do as little harm as possible and be aware when I am doing harm, and to the best of my ability, make changes where I can. So, comments, questions?
I was just reflecting on your talking about senior acts and not harming. What strikes me about that is how complicated that is. It just feels to me that oftentimes you act only as you can act, as you know how to act.
Mm-hmm.
It's oftentimes it seems to be in retrospect or reflection, there may have been a more skillful way to act. But it seems as though it's almost necessary to do that, to go through that in order to get that transformation. And so what I'd be concerned about is recounting to myself my errors in the past. It just looks like a rich ground for self-criticism. It strikes me as being not helpful, actually.
Yes, you're right.
So it's like we're in this dance of, particularly in relationship, interacting with each other, and the mystery and the wonder of it is just that there's going to be hurt feelings at times. And that's part of growth, I suppose.
Yes, yes. And I like the way you say that. It is a dance. Absolutely. It is. And you're absolutely right that reflecting on harm that we've caused can be a way of beating ourselves up. And that, of course, is not useful at all. That's harming ourselves. Hopefully, we can also use it as a way of, I'm a great animal lover, as you can probably tell, and I look back at the way I treated my cats, say, 20 years ago. Now, I have always loved cats. I've always had cats. I love them dearly. But I look back and see ways that I was cruel. I had two cats that at times would pee in the house. And this is what I learned, so this is what I did. I'd swat them and throw them outside. And I remember when my daughter was young, her saying something to me. And, you know, I brushed it off. I mean, I was a little kid. What'd she know? Now I look back and I feel terrible. And I don't do that with the cat I have now. She doesn't pee in the house either, but I wouldn't do that. I think that was really unskillful. I feel very badly about it. I don't think I beat myself up. But I do, if I think about it, I kind of go, and sometimes I actually say their names and say, I'm so sorry. I didn't know. But I don't do it to my cat now. And that's, for me, that's the usefulness. You know, I don't do it now. So I was able to use that as a way of changing my behavior now. And I think something else you said I think is really important. We don't always know. We don't always know what is going to be harmful or not. Sometimes it's very clear. Other times it's not so clear. You know, I've had a running debate with an old friend on the East Coast, an entomologist, who feels just as strongly that animals should be used for medical research. He goes into schools and teaches the importance of using animals for research. You know? Dick?
I have a thought about your comment about how difficult it can be to navigate in personal relationships so that you're not hurting people, unintentionally or whatever. But if you're in a situation like that and you realize we may not be both on the same page here. You know, there may be some problems. One thing that I've been practicing doing is making a particular statement out in the open of my intention. Because usually anybody can understand that if I say I was trying to do da-da-da, they might say, oh, I thought you were going somewhere else. That you were really commenting on something that I did or was thinking of doing or something, but a clear statement of intention can wipe away a lot of fog. Maybe then they'll come back with a statement of their intention and you get a lot of clarity. There's no universal solution, but that's a good thing to do sometimes.
Sometimes I think it's amazing that we get along at all. There's so much misunderstanding.
Yeah, because I get so much input from, that's not even to do with the words. It's to do with the way you looked when you said that.
The tone of voice.
Geez, you know, yeah. Give me a break. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I didn't know how I looked. Or maybe it was right.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say.
Right. That's right. That's why I think just being aware, and I think that's a great suggestion, setting the intent, speaking the intent, letting someone know what your intent is can make a big difference. Then even if you say it pretty sloppily or what might be hurtfully, when somebody knows that your intent is loving or kind, they can forgive what the actual words are.
Especially if your intention is kindliness, mm-hmm. then it never hurts to express a little kindliness in a way that can't be mistaken, but it's
right.
saying that was my intention.
Right. Anybody else? Thoughts?
I don't see how to live in the world without having getting somehow, some way, you know, it's just kind of just like a we kind of practice meditation, expecting, not accepting the unpleasant things. You know, like lives come with the pleasant and unpleasant, mm-hmm. the good and the bad, but the things that are, you know, pleasant as the things that are harmful to you. I mean, it cause pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see how you can live in life without the pain, and
mm-hmm.
the pain is part of the growth
mm-hmm.
of life.
Mm-hmm.
So even though sometimes I realize that I learn more from people who are really causing me pain than people who are nice to me. So yeah, just something for thought.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. I think it is, as I said, impossible to live a life without harming. And yet, the idea of not harming, the basic intent, the basic practice of not harming, most of us don't intentionally want to harm. I think it's a rare person that intentionally wants to harm. So our basic intent is not to harm. Yet, if we're not aware, if we're not mindful, we can create a lot of harm. So yeah, we set the intent not to harm and accept that we will create harm.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully people will use it.
and the other way around is that if you don't seem to you have been receiving harm, that you sometimes I just telling myself just to protect yourself. Is that people are not doing that intentionally.
Uh-huh. Yes, a good reminder.
And, you know, not taking it
personally. Personally, right. Mm-hmm. That's hard to remember, especially in relationships, but I find that a very useful concept, not to take things personally.
Yeah, they don't usually invent it just for me.
Right. You happen to be in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. Okay, shall we sit the last 10 minutes then? May all beings be happy. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings live with ease. May all beings be at peace. May all beings be free.